It's the holiday nobody cares about.
Yay!
Wait. I like chocolate.
Yeah, but every holiday from like the first of the year to 4th of July has chocolate at its center.
I know.
Has a sweet chocolatey center.
Do you have a problem with this? I think we should work chocolate into President's Day.
Oh, man.
There's no reason not to.
Like chocolate Lincoln heads or something like that?
Yeah, you could totally do, chocolate Lincoln heads. There's a joke there that I'm reaching for that I probably shouldn't do on the air.
Don't.
Yeah.
If you take a bite out of it, you feel like John Wilkes Booth.
Oh!
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Give us a call to yell at Mike for that one. He really deserves it.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, because it's apparently too soon.
Too soon, man. It's not a matter of taste, it's just too soon. And with us today, obviously, is Mike. And Libby, once again, how are you?
Yeah, good.
I'm enjoying this new spate of having you on the show a bit more.
I am,
always
too.
A good,
hooray.
Fun time. So, it's been a very weird week. We should, right out of the gate, the NFA 5 conference, which we've been talking about on the show, which we've been advertising pretty heavily on the show, as of last Monday, has been canceled. So we were going to do a show about NFA next week. Now we have no idea what we're going to do. But just letting you guys out there know that if you are going to go to NFA, don't, because you're going to be in Portland by yourself with nothing to do. Oh, what will you do in Portland except for like the 8 million amazing things you can do in Portland?
Yeah, go to Andina. That's pretty much the best restaurant on Earth.
It's a really cool ham radio store in Portland. I know that much. So it's been a very, very interesting week for news. One of our favorite guys to make fun of is in the news today. So last week, Pat Robertson of the 700 Club offered some advice that most atheists would agree with. Don't give your money to scamsters, and especially religious scamsters. Many have noted that if this advice were followed, CBN funding would quickly disappear.
I find this kind of funny because this reminds me a lot of a Simpsons gag.
Simpsons did it?
Simpsons did it, especially what's to follow.
Yeah, okay, so we have the clip, so let's play clip one here.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, beware of these scamsters, especially scamsters in religious garb, quoting the Bible. I mean, run from them.
Yes. Well,
they're all over the place.
Scamsters.
I like that the older he gets, the more he starts to sound like the Smuckers. You know, Smuckers.
No.
Raspberry preserve.
He sounds like a Skeksis.
Ooh. Kind of looks like one, too.
Can you just, like, picture him?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Scamsters.
The thing is, he's not actually going to point fingers or name names because a lot of those people are his friends.
Right. Well, he's basically pointing, but he is pointing fingers at everybody else in his industry, not realizing that he's also kind of pointing the finger back around at himself.
Well, the unspoken thing is, everybody but me is a scamster.
Yeah,
everybody. I mean, he was really worried. You know, everybody was saying, look, if we follow your advice, 700 Club goes away, you know, just so you know that you're funded exactly by this sort of stuff. Must have taken that message to heart, because 2 days later he played a segment in which a family declares bankruptcy and then begins tithing to the 700 Club. Not to the church, but the 700 Club. After ducking out of debt and recovering, they incredulously credit their stability to God Almighty. So we have that clip too. Well, a heavily edited clip, shall we?
Yes.
Deborah and her husband found themselves $5 million in debt.
Before 2009, DL and Deborah Hobby lived large. Deborah was a successful real estate agent, and DL owned a body shop until he sold it to help finance their land deals. As the couple's business exploded, so did their lifestyle. Everyone in town could see their 4,600-square-foot dream home from the main road.
We became consumed with what we thought we had to have in order to be happy, and it was basically stuff.
The Hobbies were quickly buried in an impossible amount of debt. Banks demanded payment on the loans they had taken out for their developments.
$3, $4, $5 million that we were in debt.
First, the Hobbies were forced to sell their home at a huge loss. Then in 2010, they declared personal bankruptcy. When they moved their family of four into a 1,000-square-foot home, the couple felt defeated.
Our marriage was in shambles. We had put God on the back burner. That's what caused us to unravel.
DL and Deborah did agree on one thing. They would keep on tithing despite their financial difficulties. The Hobbies began to watch the 700 Club and eventually became partners. Deborah's business eventually started to rebound, and within 2 years of the bankruptcy, the Hobbies bought a larger home. Today, they live their lives focused on God.
Clarity next up.
Not worried about all they can get, but rather all they can give.
Our finances have been restored because of him.
Oh, praise him.
And I believe that it was because of us continuing to tithe.
And for enough those of you who want to share with others and participate with what CBN is doing around the world, we encourage you to join the 700 Club. It's just $20 a month. And yet, if all of us do it together, it gets to be millions and millions and millions of dollars.
For Pat Robertson.
For Pat Robertson, yeah.
Pat Robertson.
So don't give money to religious scamsters, but hey, if you're bankrupt, 20 bucks to me is A-OK.
Right, everyone, give millions and millions and millions of dollars to the Skeksis.
And I guarantee you, one of us will be rich.
Yeah. Now, you know, here's the thing. Generally, I don't get on people for being religious. Well, sometimes I do. I am an anti-theist. But what I'm saying is, you know, when I ask the question about Catholics, I'm not yelling at you because you're Catholic. I'm yelling at you because, like, the stances your church has. I don't get why anybody gives a dollar to Pat Robertson, why anybody gives even a cent to Benny Hinn. I don't see the point, because they're not really charity organizations.
Yeah, what are they doing?
They don't help people. Yeah. Well, they do the show. And they build 80 golden toilets for Pat Robertson.
I guess it's the same mystery as why are the Kardashians famous? You know, they're famous for being famous.
Fair enough.
Well, Pat Robertson at this point is somebody who should be completely discredited. He should be somebody who has no credibility left, even among evangelical Christians. How often does this guy embarrass himself? On a monthly basis, he says something that's just ludicrous, and everyone kind of stares at their shoes because, oh, racist grandpa said something embarrassing at Thanksgiving again.
I think we talk more about Pat Robertson more than we do any other televangelist. I mean, he is sort of the big one. I mean,
yeah.
That even at his lowest level, which he's at now, he makes millions of dollars a month.
Except for that one guy in the eight, not Patrick Swayze. Jimmy Swaggart, not Jimmy.
Jimmy Swaggart.
Yeah,
Jimmy Swayze.
Jimmy Swayze.
It's his way or the highway.
And you know, I hate to say it, but you talk to anybody who's been through that industry and been out, Jimmy Swaggart isn't like an outlier. He's the baseline. The difference is he was caught.
Yeah.
And it's just this is a whole industry that's designed to take money from you so that they can have these enormous palaces and these golden toilets and these high production value TV shows and their communication satellites. And
it's really kind of an incredible scam, because really what we're talking about here is getting poor people to give money that they need to rich people, yet feeling like they're being charitable.
Yeah.
It's kind of incredible. And the fact that Pat Robertson, you'd think that even somebody who's rolling in everyone else's money while convincing them that they're basically dropping a dime in the wishing well for Jesus, that he's not above saying to this poor person who's at their bottom rung on this ladder, saying, we'll still take money from that guy.
If you got a Pat Robertson story, give us a call, 253-584-1480. And speaking of televangelists, I have to do this. It's a little bit of a geeky interlude, but you made me read All-Star Superman recently. And I read it, and there's this, like, one, like, towards the end, he dons this white suit with a helmet that's, like, Ultra Superman, Super Saiyan Superman, whatever. It reminded me of Benny Hinn.
The Benny Hinn outfit?
Yeah, it's the Benny... Superman puts on the Benny Hinn outfit and then goes and fights the sun. It's weird.
Oh, wait. I need to read this.
You do. It's
incredible.
Crazy. It is crazy. But that's the thing.
Superman actually does something with his suit. He doesn't just go around and play pretend and say, give me all your money.
And you don't need 20 bucks a month to have Superman come save you.
This is the beauty of Superman, period, is that Superman doesn't demand anything in exchange for saving you. He doesn't demand worship, and he certainly doesn't demand your last dollar.
Yeah.
He will fight the sun for free.
Superman will save you whether you believe in him or not.
Dude, get me there and I will fight the sun for free.
I would like to see that.
So here's the thing. That's Don Quixote sci-fi. Ooh, I'm sorry. I'm done talking about that because I think I figured out my next sci-fi short story. Anyway, this thing that he's doing here where you give 20, you're bankrupt, you give 20 bucks to the 700 Club. This is something that all of the other televangelists do, which he only does sort of, you know, like, as you say, kidding on the square, is prosperity gospel. Mm-hmm. If you give money to God, if you give money to church, God will invest in the stock market and, you know, do inside trading to make sure that you make millions of dollars.
Okay, so everybody who gives to the 700 Club is a millionaire. Is that what you're saying?
That's
every single one
saying.
Of them. Because there's people who give more than that 20 bucks. Are they all wonderfully successful? Or are there people, much like the situation that we saw with Harold Camping a couple of years ago, where Harold Camping is happy to take somebody's money, even if it's their last dollar, even if it means that after this moment, this person is going to be in financial hardship,
right?
He will take that last dollar away from them. It's sort of, is there a point where morally, a preacher should be a bit like the bartender and said, you've had too much, you need to stop. I would feel terrible taking from you at this point.
But that's their industry, is their millions of dollars are based off of the love donations of poor people. Peter Popoff is a great example of this. You'd give him money and he'd send you little vials of water that have supposedly came from the River Jordan, a paper prayer blanket.
Why the River Jordan?
Biblical Mad Libs.
It's more magical than
the
other
it's more river. Magical.
Yeah, because clearly that's a really peaceful region.
Yeah. So, we need to do a whole episode on this where we talk about the whole industry, because there's a lot of information out there and I haven't really seen it put in one place. This is how the televangelism industry is put together. So maybe this is something we can do.
Yeah.
Now, you could also consider answering Peggy's challenge, because it could add up to millions of dollars.
Though it likely won't.
$20 a month together.
Yeah, it never does. But No, seriously, that's something that we have to say. Every episode of the show, we also ask for money. And what are we, you know, now we have to say, what is distinct from what we're doing? And what the 700 Club is doing.
Well, for one, we don't have golden toilets, and that we're poor enough that every single dollar that comes into it goes to pay for the show.
Absolutely. Maybe you don't have a golden toilet.
Dude, hawk that and pay for a few seasons, would you?
I'll take it. I mean, because we know that if you can afford to get a regular toilet with the leftover money. But I guess the difference being is that we would say no if somebody said, I want to give you my last dollar.
Yeah,
I can't afford food and I have kids that I want to put through college. You go, no, keep your money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't give us your last dollar.
Well, we do hear from college students who say, like, you know, this is, here's $5. It's what I can give you. I'm poor, but I really want to support the show. If you want to support the show, I appreciate that, but don't bankrupt yourself doing it. Let us do that.
Cut into your actual food money.
Because unlike God, we cannot make any miracles happen that will pull you out of $5 million.
And seriously, exactly.
Sorry.
If the church really needs money, God can create gold out of thin air.
Absolutely. So, that said, we do need to talk about Peggy's challenge.
Yes.
We'd like to thank Paul from Santa Clara, California, Ethan from Fairfax, Virginia, and once again, Peggy from Kent, Washington.
Oh,
this is
God,
not
I
a repeat.
Peggy, she's awesome.
Yeah, seriously, this is not a repeat. She actually donated again. If you would like to donate to Ask an Atheist to help us keep the lights on and not buy us a golden toilet or a yacht, you can go to askanatheist.tv and click on the yellow button, and it will take you to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give goes to production of the show, goes to what's happening right now. We're needed, like,
no salary, no nothing.
Salary, yeah.
So please give money to Ask an Atheist. it could add up to millions of dollars.
All right, so let's do a quick email. This is Lee from Scotland, and he writes, I hate having to defend against being called close-minded. It's the one word against atheism, and more generally skepticism, which for me kills a conversation dead. How do you feel about this word?
I hate that. I get that so often. So often people are like, nah, you're skeptical. You're just so close-minded. And the only way you can really counter that is to say, well, I fail to see how it's close-minded to require evidence in order to believe in something and to allow evidence to change one's mind about one's preconceived notions. Isn't that the definition of open-minded?
That's it right there, which is the changing one's mind. And the thing that says that you're close-minded more than anything is making the statement or some version of it that says, there is nothing that could ever possibly change my mind.
Yeah.
That's a sentence I've heard out of the mouths of many a religious believer, that there is nothing you could say that could shake my faith. That is close-minded. You're only close-minded if you shut yourself off from new information. If you say, here's the formula to change my mind, you're not being close-minded.
Yeah.
You're actually being open-minded. You're saying that there is a scenario under which my mind could be changed about this question, but this is the bar you have to meet.
So, for me, is if I have time, and here's the thing about these debates when people throw me stuff like this, usually I go, you're close-minded, and then they run away like a mayfly.
Yeah.
And at that point, okay, you just want to get your licks in and then you want to disappear. You don't want to have to face the consequences of actually talking to somebody who will take your opinion seriously and give you serious questions about it. I get it. Fine. Go away. I don't care. But when people stick around and listen to me, then I ask them about stuff. I ask them about palm reading. I ask them about astrology. I ask them about Carillion photography. I ask them about reading the future in tater tot distribution. You ask them a bunch of questions. You ask them about that therapy where they hammer your foot with this hammery foot device, and it makes you not dumb.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
That's a thing. And, you know, you ask them all.
I think it actually does.
Yeah. But you ask them, you ask these people all this stuff. They go, well, no, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in that. There's no evidence for that. It's like, how are you any different from me?
Yeah. Well, the difference is that they compartmentalize their beliefs. That on one hand, they use the exact same methods for determining fact from fantasy on every other topic other than God. Like, just for instance, I was going to make the argument right now that I can bench press 1,000,000 pounds. I am like Superman.
Not Pat, the other guy. One of the other televangelists.
Oh, that was Pat Robertson, who claimed that his special diet shakes could give him the ability to leg press 1,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And he very quickly got quiet when somebody said, I want to see this 76-year-old man bench press 1,000 pounds. That's half a Volkswagen.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Let's do that. And he got very quiet.
Jack LaLanne could have done it.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, if I was to say, okay, I can bench...
the power of carrot juice.
I'm Superman. I can bench press 1,000,000 pounds. I just choose not to right now.
Right.
That same religious person who calls you close-minded, we go, okay, I don't believe you.
Are you 76 or 8?
76 or what?
8 years old. I can bench press 1,000,000 pounds, but mom says I have to go home.
I don't want
to.
The sun is totally in my eyes right now. I can't. but the question is that they'd say, you know what? I don't believe you.
Yeah.
But... I would believe you if you could demonstrate that. And the same thing with, I'm going to sell you a magic bean. You know, show me.
Yeah.
Show me the results of that. Then I will believe you. I'm not going to treat this as a belief by default. And really what an atheist does is take that attitude and break through that little force field you have where it's a God is the exception. God doesn't apply to that sort of thinking. And say, no, it's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You're going to have to demonstrate good reasons for believing it.
And that's the finishing move of the how are we any different. That's where you do the forward, back circle, kill in Mortal Kombat.
Finish him.
All right, so we have enough. Okay, so NFA 5 was canceled, but on June 21st at Luigi's at 5219 Pacific Highway East in Fife, Ask an Atheist is doing a live music concert. It's not something we've ever done before, and we have some great acts. We have 4 acts now: Body Box, which is Nick Kennedy's band, Animals and Cars, Little Beirut, and Sleepy Pilot. This is going to be an amazing live music concert. It's going to be a lot of people there, not just Ask an Atheist people. Luigi's is an incredible venue. It sounds great. The pizza is wonderful. It's $15 at the door, 7 p.m. June 21st. Please be there. This also helps keep the lights on because, you know, you actually get live music for showing up, so it's good. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to continue talking about the uncertainty of Pat Robertson and some bad news and some good news and some emails. See you in a minute.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And it's really weird about Pat Robertson. That's why we called it the Pat Robertson Uncertainty Principle. He really is the old uncle in the corner who says stuff that you don't like, you know. You have no idea what he's going to say.
Yeah.
And it's always a hoot.
The thing is, his material hasn't changed much since the 1980s.
No.
But attitudes have. This has become a lot more embarrassing to say certain things, where I think that the bigotry is still there in the evangelical movement.
Yeah.
But they couch it a little bit different. We don't hate the gay people. We hate what they do. Yeah. But he's still kind of living in that 1970s moral majority world.
Is that him or is that more Billy Graham?
Well, I think it's the fact that more secular voices have kind of come in there. I think even Billy Graham would pull back on a lot of the fire and brimstone stuff. He's done his entire career.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really old now, and then his son probably speaks for him. And his son really is of that fire and brimstone kind of thing. Is for all the talk about Billy Graham being this wonderful, I guess, the default pastor for everyone in America, he spouts the same kind of you better believe in Jesus or burn forever stuff that all of these guys do.
Absolutely.
He has a reputation for being moderate that he really doesn't deserve. Plus, he's an anti-Semite.
But you never know where he's going to go, Pat Robertson. Billy Graham kind of always goes to the same racist, weird area, I guess. But he is the friend that you inherit whenever you become president.
Yeah, I try to treat him like Tom on MySpace, yeah. that every president kind of gets him for
that,
free.
That's a joke that maybe nobody's going to... I've never been on MySpace.
Well, I've got to use that joke because it's not going to be worth anything in about 3 years.
There are like people born right now who don't even know that MySpace ever existed.
Yeah.
Just think about that for a minute.
So we have some...
I envy those people.
I know, me too.
The living shall envy the... Whatever. I shouldn't do that joke because we got some bad news we got to talk about. So this is why I shouldn't do jokes before I read ahead in the notes. Anyway, so the flu season is nearing its conclusion, and it's not a terrible flu season like it was a couple years ago, but it's still not a very good flu season. And there are 105 kids this year who died due to the flu, and non-vaccination was to blame. That number, 105, is triple the number of children killed during last year's flu season. 90% of the children were not vaccinated against the flu. The vaccine this year was not expected to be effective, especially with senior citizens, but Dr. Michael Jung of the CDC explained that it should have worked well with vaccinated children 64% less likely to require hospitalization. 60% of the children were at an unusual risk for flu complications, meaning that 40% or 41 kids were perfectly healthy when they got the flu, and if they were vaccinated, they probably wouldn't have died.
Yeah. Yeah. And who knows how many of those kids who were at higher risk for the flu would not have been exposed to it
right. Had
we had stronger herd immunity.
Yeah.
It's really reprehensible. It's disgusting. People who are against vaccination because they claim it's going to make you sick or they just don't want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about you and your kids. It's about these other people's kids. It's these other families who are losing little children just like your own because you just don't want to vaccinate your kids.
And it's disgusting too because the people who are largely the anti-vaxxers in this country are people who should know better.
Yeah.
These are people who have access to education, yeah, who live in are generally much more progressive across the board, but they're convinced that evil big pharma is putting cancer and death and all sorts of stuff in these syringes. And you don't have this mentality because you know, these diseases that we conquered a long time ago, we have a tendency to downplay things like measles and the flu.
It's really hard to downplay polio.
It is, but I mean, it's this idea that these are diseases we conquered, and you're like, oh, I had the flu once, it wasn't so bad, I missed work for a couple days.
Yeah.
But you forget that these things used to kill people.
Yeah.
And
large numbers
do.
Of people. Yeah.
I don't know. And the people who, big pharma, me, have fun cowering under your freaking tinfoil hats, you losers. You sound like a bunch of lunatics, and you are. I don't understand how anybody can call themselves a good moral person when they don't give a rip about the health of the other people around them.
At 253-584-1480, if you'd like to challenge us on this, we'd really like to hear from you. Don't, you know, it'll be kind of a call, but this is the thing, is the anti-vax movement leads to dead children. This is a direct equation. There's no hand waving. There's no like piles of statistics to go through. The data is there. The computation has been done. As vaccination decreases, especially in Washington State, because we have some of the most lax anti-vaccination laws in the country, as vaccination in Washington State decreases, the number of dead children increases. We can talk about guns all we want. We can talk about Sandy Hook all we want. But the fact of the matter is, there's something local going on right now that nobody is talking about because people wave their hands and go freedom issue.
Well, yeah, and I'm sorry to bring up a tired old cliche and to haul it out of the cliche graveyard, but if you're not enraged over this, you're just not paying attention, honestly. I mean, that's what it boils down to. Yeah.
What drives me crazy about this is they go, well, ooh, big pharma, ho.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? Big pharma has terrible political views.
Absolutely.
They lobby for terrible laws.
Okay.
They make it, they lobby, go out of their way to make healthcare expensive for everyone to maximize their profits. However, their stuff works.
Okay.
Their stuff works. We're going to just get that out of the way, because I've seen so many times you get into these arguments where somebody goes, political problem, monetary problem, financial issue. That has nothing to do with whether the science works.
Sure.
The science works.
You are making a bit of a political statement there.
I am making a political statement there, but again, these are different issues.
Yeah.
If you have an issue, it's the same thing with a lot of things. Are you talking about a political objection to this company?
Yeah.
Or are you talking about the scientific basis for their product?
To drag it back to more inside the circle of Ask an Atheist, good, and that's a great point, and this is, you know, sort of bring it back, is the GMO situation, the vaccination situation, and the morality of Big Pharma are three separate issues. They should
yes,
not,
they are. It,
research is one thing. The morality of people who are not doing research is another. Yes, there are interconnections because we're talking about parts of society, of course. But you can't say everything that's happening is bad about research. It's not, you know, research doesn't necessarily mean a moral decision.
And not everybody that works for a company is like twisting their mustache and coming up with ways to hurt children. This is, again, this sort of totality principle that I see happen a lot. And the left is not immune to it any more than the right is, which is that I see somebody like Michelle Bachmann, who doesn't like the way politically a vaccine is distributed to prevent HPV in Texas. She doesn't like the politics of it.
Right.
But that's not good enough for her. The vaccine itself has to be harmful.
Right.
That it must make children mentally retarded. And she believes that without question of whether that actually has any merit or not, because she hates this thing politically, therefore the substance must be bad.
Right.
Same thing on the left with GMOs and with vaccines. I don't like Big Pharma. I don't like Monsanto. Therefore, the science is bad. No, that's not how it works.
Absolutely.
You can have a company that makes products that are great that have politics that are bad, or vice versa. And frequently, the vice versa is true for that nonsense sugar pill stuff that you sell. They may be wonderful and may lobby for a lot of bills you like, but you know what? They're still selling garbage.
Yeah. James Randi's still downing a bottle of those sleeping pills at every event he does, and I don't think they've caused him to go to sleep yet.
No, one of the greatest demonstrations in all of science, by the way, is just James Randi chowing down on a big bottle of
how does he do that with
homeopathic version of Ambien? It's great.
Because I would be coughing that up, not because there's anything in it, but that's a lot of pills.
I know.
It's basically just eating a giant bottle of chalk.
Yeah. that takes
You guys, he is a magician.
Yeah, I want to see him. I imagine at some point before he started doing this, he was at home with like a crate of this stuff, just sort of learning how to consume this on stage without gagging. And that could be a good YouTube video, I think. I'm a little weird. Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We have another email. And this comes to us from Cameron from the interwebs. And she writes, my question regards marriage where one believes and another does not. I'm an atheist and my wife is a Catholic. She's fairly relaxed, but does have some things that she doesn't want to budge on. When we have kids, she wants to baptize them. I want to wait for when they can understand a bit more. But she got hysterical when I suggested the idea, saying that the repercussions were greater if they weren't baptized. Have you had any experience with couples like us and how they handle situations like these? Short answer, yes. Now the long answer.
The long answer is, in the interest of marital peace, there are some things you just have to give in on. I mean, sometimes, for the sake of family members you love, you just make a concession and you just roll with it because it's going to calm them down and allow them to get by and function. So, my fiancé is in the military, and although he is not religious, I don't think I've ever heard him describe himself as an atheist, but he's not a believer, so therefore he pretty much is basically an atheist. But his dog tags actually say Catholic on them. That is not for his benefit. It's for the benefit of his mother and some of his other family members who, if he were to be killed in the line of duty, those tags on him identify what type of services are performed over his remains. It would be very important to his Catholic mother that he receive the last rites.
And when you're an atheist, I think that's something you can say, is that once you're dead, Do whatever you guys need to do to make you feel better. I'm dead. I can't care.
Right. So in the case of baptizing a baby, you know, it's a baby. It's not going to, like, remember this later on. It's as an infant, it's not going to have to go through indoctrination in order to launch into baptism later, like I did as a Mormon child. You know, yeah, just if it's going to calm your wife down and let her sleep at night, just do it.
It seems to me, and I want you to chew on this one for a moment, yeah. If you want to save your baby from going to hell while it's a child, the best thing you can do is not baptize it. But you have sort of a slightly different take on that.
Yeah, I think that this is the sort of thing. Before you have children, Cameron, I would say this. You need to not only have this conversation about baptism, about a hypothetical child, you need to have every conversation, because this is a bit of a canary in a coal mine. Because once you have that kid, you have a connection to this person, no matter what happens to your marriage, no matter what happens to anything else, you're going to have to co-raise this kid with this other person for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
This is not going to go away. So you need to have not only conversations about baptism, which your kid not might remember, but upbringing too, because suddenly I think that people who may be really easy on not going to church while they're dating you, once it becomes their kid, they may become a lot more religious than they are now.
I think you need to have that conversation. Becky and I had that conversation, but I think we also have to recognize, well, one, credit to Cameron, because it sounds like they're having that conversation now. But the other thing is you don't always know everything that's going to come up. People are limited. Sometimes they forget stuff. And it should be an ongoing conversation, but what happens when they encounter something that they didn't think of further down the line?
That's why you have to have you need to talk about
that's
everything.
That's impossible. That is impossible.
Everything you can think of.
You're going to miss something.
Well, obviously you're going to miss something. But
you got to try to cover all the bases.
Cover as many as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that I think is that compromise is a two-way street. Yeah, maybe you can do a couple things because it'll, you know, make your wife happy, but she has to be able to reciprocate on that. That it isn't always going to be the atheist that has to sort of sit back and let the other partner choose every single life decision for this kid, because then essentially you have no voice.
That's true.
And you have to make sure that your beliefs and your views are respected just as much as hers are. And I worry that sometimes the religious person has this expectation that because we don't have this structure, that they get to win this argument by default. And I don't want that to be the case.
Okay, there's a serious component here. And the discussion that Becky and I had speaks directly to that. But I posed you a question to you that if you want to save your kids from hell, isn't the worst thing to do is to baptize them?
I think that totally depends on A, the religion you're talking about,
Catholics,
that's involved, and B, what your wife's actual beliefs about that are. Because really, this is, you know, from our perspective, nothing is going to happen to your child if they unfortunately, horribly were to die as a baby, you know? Like, nothing. They're not going to go to hell. But what does your wife believe is going to happen? She's the one whose feelings are going to matter in this situation, because she's the one who's going to be tormented for the rest of her life if she doesn't baptize her baby and then it dies.
Here's the thing, is if going through the Catholic, if running the Catholic home run is important to her, then clearly she pays attention to the catechism.
Right.
In which case, all of the wizards in Italy got together and cast a 20th level epic spell to get rid of limbo and up, you know, basically mid-flight upgrade all of the babies to heaven. So the unbaptized babies or you know, children before the age of reason go to heaven automatically.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Maybe his wife doesn't believe that. Maybe his wife is like an old school Catholic.
Then if his wife has split from the church on this opinion, then she can probably diverge on other points, given that she's married an atheist.
Probably.
And I think there's some room for negotiation.
But this
there.
Is the compromise that he's asking for, which is to put it off.
Yeah.
And again, this is a simple question. Other ones are like, you know, I want to make her happy.
This
by
is not a simple question. No. This is children. This is the most complex thing on earth.
I'm saying comparably to other questions of religion that are going to come up. Mm. The baptism is that thing where it's easy to make the compromise on that. That's something where I could see. But what if, you know, to make her feel better because she's afraid of her kid going to hell, it also means, hear me out on this. is that it's like suddenly Sunday school is important, and suddenly going to church every week is important, and suddenly making sure that he's Catholic is important.
I would say that's less important than the baptism. Not less important, but that's of the same importance.
But this is the stuff that the baby will remember. This is the thing that the way the child is raised and whose values are going to be imparted on this kid.
Okay.
And does this other person have a say?
This is such a fraught topic that three radio show hosts can't even agree on it.
Let me put it. No, I've just challenged. I haven't put my perspective on it yet. So here you.
All right, here we go.
Becky is Jewish. I am not. When we met, she was a believer. She's not a believer now, but she's still Jewish. So here's the thing. If we have kids, our children, because of the way, you know, Jewish identity works, our children will be Jewish. I'm not. And in order for me to become Jewish, in order for me to share that identity with those children, I have to, according to the, you know, the way they generally do things in that religion, I have to go find an Orthodox rabbi and convert. And that means I would have to believe. So there's no way for me to maintain identity and yet share the same cultural identity as my children. Whether or not we believe, it's a bit weird, got to admit, but that's how it was explained to me.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I've even seen David Cross, a comedian, talk about that, how he says he's not allowed to not be Jewish even though he's an atheist because his mother was a Jewish.
Right.
And
this is sort of the other side of that. And that what that brings in the case of Cameron, and this is what we're not talking about, is we're being focused on the children. Let's talk about Cameron for a minute. He's going to be the outlier in his family. Once again, he's the outcast atheist. They're all religious, they're all Catholics, they're all believers, whatever, and they share an identity that he doesn't. To me, I've got a little bit of a problem with alienation. I'll tell you that right now. I've felt alienated from people for a long time. That wasn't something I could easily handle in my family. I can't instantly be ostracized from my family because I don't share a common this common magical thing.
Okay, right. Can I interject this one thing though? Is that why do we automatically make the assumption that the children are Catholic? Because
a different perspective.
Oh, I know. What Cameron is offering up, though, is a compromise, and I don't think that his wife recognizes that it's a compromise, which is that he's not saying, I want to impart my values on this kid, and I get to choose. He's saying, why don't we raise the kid morally and let them develop these sorts of opinions on their own?
Well, that's clearly what you do. I mean, that's clearly what we're arguing here.
Yeah, rather than just putting them in the Catholic
box.
Okay,
but let's go back to my question. I mean, what does Cameron do in that situation? Can he make that argument?
Here's exactly what Cameron does. This is what I think. You compromise on the baptizing as infant issue, let her baptize the kid when it's a little baby, but extract that compromise from her under the agreement that you will allow the kid to make up its own mind about what it actually believes for itself.
Yes.
And that was the agreement that we essentially came to, is if they're going to have this identity and she wants them to, you know, to go to like learn about it and be a part of it, I get my turn too, and they get to make that decision, and whatever decision they make is the decision that stands. It is not we who decide for the children, it is the child who decides.
Acceptable.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Get back in a minute.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules, a variation on our usual fantasy campaign system. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, as well as a listing of other products and to get involved in the community forums.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back! This is Ask an Atheist. 253-584-1480. And after that heavy segment, yikes, dead kids, born kids, religion, my new marriage, etc., etc., we're going to talk about tape. Tape.
Tape.
I'm not kidding. Like, actual packing tape. It's, it's kind of a thing. So, packages with, kind of a thing. I mean, it's kind of a,
those wacky kids and their packing tape.
Everything that exists is kind of a thing. Jeez. So, packages with atheist tape. Are 10 times more likely to get lost. A German company, Atheist Shoes, recently conducted an ad hoc study where two shipments were sent to addresses throughout the United States. One shipment unmarked, and another one packed with tape repeatedly bearing the word atheist, as they have normally done in the past. 178 packages were sent to 89 addresses in 49 states, leaving Berlin on the same day. On average, the atheist-labeled packages took 3 days longer and were 10 times more likely to get lost than the unmarked packages. The actual tally was one unmarked package lost, 9 marked packages lost. As a result, Atheist Shoes will no longer use the tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I'm just excited that there's an Atheist shoe company.
They look... you know there's that fad of shoes that look like bowling shoes?
Yeah, yeah.
They're kind of those. Ah. And then they say atheist on the bottom, and you leave atheist tracks.
Oh, like I needed an excuse to buy more shoes. I'm sure my fiancé will be thrilled.
I read up on it, yeah. It's a guy in Ireland thought of it, and he works with this company in Germany to produce them. And they do look pretty cool. But they're shoes, so I don't really care. You know, I'm kind of the opposite of you. I have one pair of shoes. I wear them everywhere. So I don't think this is a conspiracy. I don't think the USPS is saying
not no, from the top.
Not from the top. But I think it's likely that there are people who are saying, oh, this is atheist. I'm going to do weird things.
I'm with you on that. I think that there's two different things. There's not like the USPS meets in this smoke filled room.
Yeah,
and they're like, oh, we have this problem. How are we going to solve this?
The shadowy postal cabal.
Cancer man puts delay stickers on the packages.
The guy with the white cat on his lap trying to figure out how to stop the shoes from getting to their.
Oh, I miss Donald Pleasant.
And I look at this and I'm thinking, no, that's not what it is. But you know what? The USPS, they employ how many millions of people around the country, and some of those people are inevitably going to be jerks who are like, I'm just going to throw this over there because I don't like this. And so, the same people who vandalize your car or take off the Darwin fish on your car.
So here's the thing. This has been going around social media, and a lot of, like, I guess USPS apologists, I don't know what you'd call them, are saying, you know, that's fine, I enjoy the Postal Service as well, are saying that because there are words on them, that they're getting put in another bin, and it's causing them a delay in service. And I'm sorry, that's complete crap. That doesn't make any sense at all. Both Libby and I use the Postal Service quite frequently for receiving and shipping packages through eBay. I order a lot of stuff from China. I order a lot of electronic stuff and, you know, little packages. Most of that comes through the U.S. Postal Service. If I lost one, and here's the thing. All of these packages have writing on them in several languages. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever received a package that was unlabeled except for U.S. Postal Service stuff. And if I lost one package out of 10, I would never use the Postal Service again. If that was considered acceptable losses, I would, you know, Congress would be up in arms. There would be an anti-monopoly thing. I mean, they're looking to cut costs as it is. So that, you know, the USPS, the U.S. Postal Service sucks. So let's challenge that. If that were true, the fact that is not happening, I think, is a clear indicator that something's going on here.
Yeah, but
I think it's the actions of individuals. I don't think it's
It's nothing concerted.
Conspiracy.
It's not like, they're not all meeting in secret. There's individual people who work for the post office, just as there's individual people who are jerks who rip your Darwin fish off your car.
Right.
Some of those people work for the Postal Service, inevitably, out of the millions of people that work for the Postal Service.
Yeah.
They see that sticker, and they're like, oh, I'm just going to shove that over on that shelf. Maybe I'll send it later. Ha ha, take that, atheist. most of the people who work for the Postal Service are completely professional.
And that's the thing, is that we've got these... it's just not a conspiracy. It's just individual people. And we actually contacted the U.S. Postal Service to ask them about this, and we did receive a response. The Postal Service strives to provide superior performance for inbound international mail. We are aware of no effort or initiative indicating that shipments from the particular mailer are being deliberately delayed for any reason, as the Postal Service does not consider the sender's identity to factor into its service performance. We regret if senders or recipients have discovered that any particular shipment has exceeded the expected transit time furnished by the foreign post dispatching the items to the United States. Best Day. This is David Partenheimer at Media Relations at the U.S. Postal Service.
They have a media relations organization?
They got to. They're enormous. They're not a business, but they're an enormous organization. Of course they're going to have some media relations.
Everything has a media relations department now. I mean, Facebooking has become a job.
Still, the Vatican still doesn't.
So it sounds like you know, they've done no research on this. They haven't looked into it. They're just cutting boilerplate. That was clearly boilerplate I just read.
Yeah, I bet you they just changed one of the two of the words, and they're like, this isn't true, and this is not a problem that we have, and there is no official, you know, program for hurting you.
So, given that it's not like a conspiracy thing, that we think it's likely a systemic thing, it's time, you know, I think there should be further tests, and I think there should be tests from different places. And I actually contacted the Atheist Shoes Company to say, you know, are you guys going to sell the tape that you don't use? Because I would like to run this test. I would like to put atheism tape on packages and then, you know, ship them around and do more than just airmail. We could do experiments. This is a situation where we could test it, and then by bringing that attention, the fact that multiple people are doing experiments like this, maybe we can get it to stop.
Yeah, I don't even know why. I guess it just kind of blows my mind. It's just, this is a symptom of a much larger cultural issue, which is that people really don't like us. They sight unseen, don't even have to know you. They just have to see the A word. We've seen this at different street fairs where we've actually had been sitting in a booth. And people seem to think that having the A word up anywhere is, having to see it is an attack on them.
Right.
That me not having to hide in the closet is an attack on them. And they immediately have this right of response to start yelling at me.
Yeah.
And that hasn't changed. I think it's getting better, and I think that the Atheist Visibility Movement is about changing that. That if you are somebody, the more people are used to seeing that we exist and that we are allowed to contribute our opinions to the national dialogue just as much as anyone else, the less likely they are to go, oh, this is an evil person, I'm throwing their package away.
Right.
I agree.
So, like I said, I hope the Atheist Shoes organization releases that tape so that we can do further testing and try to figure out what's going on.
Release the tape!
Release the tape, singular. So I got another email. This is Anne from the United States. So local. I do not understand how there is so much fear among atheists. If atheists do not believe in God or a greater power, then why is there a need to raise money to fight religions other than atheism that do? Atheism is all caps. As an atheist, it seems so pointless. I guess there is a fear that there might be a creator who might hold the atheist accountable. Atheism is a religion insisting on its own way. How can that be? If atheists don't believe in God, then why not just complain and have time to have life until death? At that point, the truth will be known. Actually, the Christian insists that God loves all and wants to know his love. First one must know of the need to be loved and forgiven. Earth is a horrible place compared to heaven, etc., etc.
It started strong and sort of devolved into a little bit of a theological mess.
Well, no, it started with a clear question. Why do we fight religion?
We're not fighting religion.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not like out trying to stop people from having religion or anything like that. It's the fact that religion gets so deeply entwined into politics and begins to affect other people's lives, and that's not cool.
Pederasty, marriage equality, vaccinations,
people flying planes into buildings.
Illness. People flying planes into buildings. Terrorism.
People throwing an acid into the face of little girls who want to learn how to read.
Yeah, shooting people in the head
who want to learn who want to go to school.
Blasphemy laws.
Yeah.
People who want to prevent somebody from getting a legal abortion. People who want to prevent somebody from being able to... people who want to use their religion and use the state as a tool for forcing that religion on people.
Right.
These little, you know, everything from nativity scenes to In God We Trust, all these things where they want to put their ownership stamp on everything. It's because they're so aggressive.
Asking for money to make a golden toilet. I mean, we could just list... my point is this isn't, you know, why do we not believe in religion? Because of the evidence. Why are we anti-theists? Because of the damage that religion does to real, the evidentiary damage. Stuff we can count, stuff we can see.
And we're not afraid of God. We're not, you know, cowering in fear of his judgment after we die, because... Yeah. God apparently doesn't exist, as far as the evidence indicates.
Yeah.
So why fear something that doesn't exist? What we're trying to do is make the world a better place for people who are here right now. And one of the ways to do that is by preventing religion from screwing everything up.
It's like saying, I want to be a good, efficient worker because I'm afraid that Darth Vader will come and inspect me and choke me if I don't. I'm afraid of this judgment that might come from this imaginary character. He doesn't exist, therefore, my behavior is not steered by anything with whether it's Darth Vader or Yahweh. It's not there.
I think, I you know...
She's not interested in answers. She asks questions that she immediately goes,
there's a million conceptualizations of God here, and her God here is not. I've seen better. If we say God is a role playing game character, this is a crappy role. Her God here. This is a junky role. This is the terrible God of the gaps who's going to destroy people, and this God is dumb. This is not. I'm not afraid of him. I'm not afraid of any of that because none of it is real. You know, I'm actually willing to say that I don't. We say there's a belief and then there's evidence. We believe that there is no God. The evidence is not for or against God. But I'm actually willing to say, I'm willing to begin to say that the evidence is that your God doesn't exist.
It's funny because I don't think she believes that atheists exist.
Yeah.
She seems to be under the impression.
Oh, that's a common one.
I've encountered this a lot, that you know that God exists, but you think that you can just put your fingers in your ears and pretend he doesn't because you're afraid of judgment. Okay, it's like pretending that the cops don't exist.
Yeah.
That's a ridiculous thing. Nobody responds to something that they actually believe in that way. And it's amazing how many tropes that are repeated. And again, why do we have an organization? Why do we have a radio show? Because of garbage like this.
Yeah.
Because of these beliefs that people just spout off. It's funny, she asked a question, but she is not at all interested in hearing what we have to say because
no,
she immediately answers it herself.
Yeah, she asks the question, she answers the question, and then it sort of devolves into why you suck as a human being.
She just starts preaching at us, and we're not interested in that.
Well, we are. We're answering it.
Well, we're answering that, but I'm not interested in the preaching part.
No.
Because I want to watch preaching. There's TV channels and radio channels that just broadcast that nonsense 24 hours a day. It's not like I haven't heard Christianity. It's not hard to find.
If I can do a pre-refutation of the usual, because, I mean, we've danced this dance so many times. This is a boring prom. Can we move on? Is what they're going to say is, that's not what God do. People do that. Yes. I agree, but this is people speaking for God. I'm not fighting a war against God. I don't care about God. I don't believe in God. It's not a thing that exists. It's not something I'm going to concern myself with. When you take away the belief in God concept, you still have these people who are perpetrating these horrible things in the name of a creature that doesn't exist.
Yes, that's it. That's it. We're not fighting God. We are fighting people.
Yeah.
And why do we do this? Why do we raise money? Because we have to fight people who are dangerous and are hurting our society.
Yeah, basically. That's it. So, another email. Tom from the internet. So, another local. How do you think theists are able to ignore the biological similarities between all animals and ourselves? Why do you think theists assign a soul to the mammal Homo sapiens and not to the mammal platypus?
There are theists who do assign souls to all living things, including plants.
Monster pooing.
Oh, yeah. I think this is just another one of those things. Some people believe in dog heaven.
Yeah.
I don't know if they believe in dog hell.
Burt Reynolds in that.
Well, some people Burt believe Reynolds in movie. This. Oh, some scattered groups of Christians believe in dog heaven. No, I mean, there are actual organized religions that assert that all living things have souls.
That's true.
So,
Hinduism, for instance,
we're
all part of the same cycle.
You can't really write it off and be like, meh, theists, just ignore.
But a lot
all
of
animals, because not all of them do.
But specifically, the Abrahamic religions.
Well, yes, the Abrahamic religions typically.
Yeah, the locus of the soul is in humanity. Humanity is special because it's made in God's image. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and they probably believe that because it's essentially in Genesis, in not so many words.
That plants and animals are a resource for us to exploit. That we're the special, beautiful snowflake, and everything else.
We're the ones created in God's image, etc.
How do they ignore that? How do they ignore everything else?
Right.
I mean, they try really hard. I mean, that's the thing that really kind of offends me, that so people who can overcome facts by their faith being really strong and the fact that I'm supposed to respect that, that's somehow admirable that someone can just shove their fingers in their ears and go, I don't see that, I don't see that, I'm going to continue to believe this, I don't matter how much doubt I have. That's not something that's admirable. And when somebody says, I just have the faith that I, you know, believing something when it's really hard isn't admirable. It's actually kind of pitiable.
I would agree.
I can see that. You know, they just basically look at the Bible, plug their ears, and ignore the evidence.
There's a word for it.
Yeah.
Denial.
Also close-minded, oddly enough.
Yes.
And we come full circle.
We have one other email. In the episode, this is Matthew from Champaign, Illinois. Hey, I've been there. In your episode about arts, about the art school in the Northwest who put on the play The Most Fabulous Story Ever Told, most of you thought it was a First Amendment issue and the school perhaps should not have put on the play. What if the play had put on a parody of Zeus or Poseidon? Would that be a First Amendment issue? In my opinion, art gets a free pass. It is assumed in art and that the school is not endorsing the message, but endorsing the exploration of the art. Just a thought. Love your show. Thanks. So I have a quick answer. What if they put on Birth of a Nation?
Ah.
What if they put on the Turner Diaries?
Yeah, or the Turner Diaries. Or, you know,
You know, one-upmanship.
Jared Diaries, the musical!
I actually attended a high school that's just like the one they describe here, where it was all arts-focused curriculum.
Yeah.
It was really cool. But, you know, it was a public school. I mean, you cross... Yes, in non-public-funded... you know, society, yes, art should get a free pass for anything, I think.
I disagree.
Well, okay.
What if there's an art? What if there's
But we're talking about school that is publicly funded, paid for with taxpayer dollars. You have all different kinds of people contributing to this school and contributing to these children's education. You have to make it as truly secular as possible.
So here's the thing, though, that I think Matthew was missing, mm-hmm. is that this is a play about religion making a message about religion.
Right.
Like we were talking about Lysistrata, where right. Zeus shows up and says stuff. And I think that's okay, because it's not a message about necessarily religion. It's a historical message and stuff like that. Religion is a part of human life. I get that. So religion is going to show up in the public school context. But right. when it's a religious play, or when it's a play about religion, making religious messages...
Exactly. That's where it crosses
the line. That's where it crosses the line.
And imagine if there was an arts college in a much more conservative part of the country...
Right.
...that decided that they were going to do a story about how evolution isn't true and that Darwin is the villain of your play, and they were doing it just as the musical artsy statements, you would throw a fit. You would lose it and say, how dare this public school do this play?
Yeah.
It's amazingly easy to discount things that are unconstitutional when you happen to agree with its message.
Yeah, that's the problem, is if we are going to be secularists when it comes to government, we have to watch out for messages that we disagree with, and that's easy to do because we can, you know, everybody is like that. But we also have to watch out for messages that we agree with that still violate the secularism clause. That's what it comes down to. I mean,
yeah. I guess I look at it, and people like to accuse us, you're just as bad as the fundamentalists. If we take the attitude that we're allowed to push our beliefs and religious views through a public school system and they're not, then we would be just as bad as the
absolutely.
Fundamentalists.
Exactly. We would be. And we have to guard against that because, you know, that's probably how they got into the position they are now of being the ones who often push their views into public schools that way.
Absolutely. So. And that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me is Mike Gillis and Libby Grant. Our music is by Chris Coleman. Post show is Mike Gillis Appreciation Night at Doyle's at 5 p.m.
Yay!
Ask an Atheist is an NEDM Media production. You can call us at 206-420-0997 or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv.
Clay Radio, your conversation station.